Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening and welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network Radio Program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters. The top cat is out on a little R&R, but we're both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we've got a great show coming up for you, but we always want to start by thanking some of the sponsors that help make the show possible, including the battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, the Charlie Wilson Insurance Agency, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Daphne's Hottest Place for Chow, the waterfront restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive, the Medicare lady, Miss Keisha Chambers, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens. And of course, we do want to thank all of our sponsors, and you are great listeners, because we could not do this without your support. So please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them. So join in the discussion on Facebook for more information on the topics of the day. And coming up later on SBN, we will be joined by World War II Navy veteran Bruce Pop Jones, along with his son Billy. You know, we just commemorated D-Day, and Pop will share some of his experiences during the war. And, of course, Tom's tirade on Old Glory. It's a good one you don't want to miss. But first, it's always a privilege to be joined on SBN by veteran Patrick Jump from the Warrior Legacy Ranch. Patrick, welcome back to SBN, and thank you for your service.
Yeah, thank you, Cal. Thanks for having me. I don't think you and I have ever spoken before on the radio, but no time like the present.
Yeah, I think I've introduced you a couple of times, and then Tom kind of handles everything going forward. But I know that there are some exciting things that are happening out there. So get us up to state. Well, start by just sort of letting folks know, if they're not familiar with the Warrior Legacy Ranch, exactly what that is.
Yeah, so our long-term plan, Cal, is to build a 7,000 square foot, 12 bedroom facility that will host platoon reunions. That's a huge fundraising goal. It's right around $850,000 in funding that we have to raise for that. But faster impact, I guess you could say, to utilize some of the donations that we've received, was to build the Gulf Coast Veterans Community Resource to kind of fill the gap here in Baldwin County and across the Gulf Coast of 24-hour veteran resources that are all-encompassing of everything that there is. You know, we partner with other organizations. We allow other organizations to utilize our space if they want. But we've added some new features out there that are kind of great. And, you know, a little history lesson, I guess. In 1952, the United States Marine Corps purchased a 14-hand Mongolian mayor to carry ammunition across the front lines. And during the Battle of Outpost Vegas in 1953, she made 51 trips carrying 9,000 pounds of ammunition. She was reddish brown in color and had a white stripe down her nose and four white socks. And we had the opportunity last week to purchase a 14-hand quarter horse who's reddish in color and has a white stripe down her nose. So she's 9 years old. She came with the name Whiskey. So in honor of Sergeant Reckless, the horse from the Marine Corps in the Korean War, we named her Whiskey Reckless, and she is now part of our new equine assisted learning program.
That is outstanding. So it's a great addition to what you have going on out there. So what are some of the things that will happen with that program, the equine program?
Yeah, so you know, veterans will come out and kind of enjoy each other's company, learn about horses. But really it's sit and talk and allow that horse to, you know, kind of visit the group as they're talking. Horses are extremely instinctual. They know what you're feeling, how you're feeling it. They know if you need to talk. I think Brian Eddy tells a great story from Bonfire Ranch about veterans sitting around with his horses, and there was a person there who wasn't really saying anything, wasn't doing anything, and the horse kind of came up and nudged her and got her to speak up. And so it's a really great thing to have out here, out on our property for veterans to utilize. And it kind of goes hand in hand with our... Go ahead.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it kind of goes hand in hand with our veteran and spouse and family engagement with our Fireside Fridays, which we're going to get started here real soon because we just finished the fire pit patio and pergola and got all the chairs up. I know Tom wanted me to mention that. When we ordered the chairs, we had enough funding for a certain amount of chairs. So we ordered 10 Cypress chairs. We ordered 4 swings. And I was standing there, I just finished putting everything together, and I started counting seats, like how many places do we have? And it turns out we had 22 seats exactly, and that wasn't done on purpose, but very symbolic of what we're trying to prevent by utilizing
absolutely,
that stage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, that is a great step forward. And so you're looking to utilize that space here in the next few weeks for the Fireside Fridays.
Yep. And so, you know, no appointment necessary. If you follow us on our Facebook, we'll kind of let you know when that first Friday is going to be. We're kind of watching the weather to do it. But then from there on out, it'll be every other Friday. And if a veteran just shows up or they bring their whole family and show up, that's great. And we want them to meet each other and hang out and, talk. Families can talk, you know, spouses can talk to one another and complain about being married to an old veteran, you know, whatever they want.
Now let me ask you this. Obviously you're making strides and you're doing some things that, as you kind of said, short term, but your longer term goal is that $850,000 that is needed to really outfit the dream that you got there for our veterans and their families. If someone out there is listening and they might want to make a donation, where should they go? Should they go to your Facebook page? What's the best place for them to look to be able to make a donation like that?
Yeah, so a couple of different options on that and a couple of different programs that are coming soon that you can donate to. So if you go to gulfcoastvets.org, you'll look for the link that says Veteran Home Relief Team, and you can sign up to volunteer to be part of our Veteran Home Relief Team. And that program is going to, if a veteran's in need of a fence or if a veteran's in need of a wheelchair ramp, we're going to be that group that shows up to that veteran's house and takes care of that project for them. be with a trailer of tools and the materials from whoever we can get to donate, but you can donate directly to that program specifically. You can donate on Warrior Legacy Ranch directly to Warrior Legacy Ranch. Or like I mentioned, there's that 12-bedroom facility. I would really encourage businesses across the Gulf Coast to sponsor an individual room and decorate that room however you want, so that the over 10,000 veterans that are already signed up for reunions know to come to your business the week that they're here for their reunion.
Outstanding. Well, Patrick, thank you again for your service and your ongoing service to the veterans community. Thank you for being here with us this evening, and we look forward to talking with you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Thanks.
All right, have a great evening. On the other side of the break, World War II veteran Pop Jones when we return to the Scuttlebutt. Great of thunder, sent it high.
This is the end, beautiful friend.
I've been a soldier since I was 19. And I still haven't learned how to wait for it. I wanted a mission for my sins. They gave me one.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. And hey, if you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired shows are up via podcast on the FM Talk 106.5 app. And Tom's Tirade is up on castbox.fm if you want to get your blood pressure going. And it is certainly an honor to be joined on SBN by World War II veteran Bruce Pop Jones and his son Billy. Pop and Billy, welcome to the Scuttlebutt.
Glad to be here.
Well, it is my honor to be speaking with you. You know, to have a World War II veteran that is able to come on and share their memories and their stories, especially in light of the fact that we just commemorated D-Day, it really is my honor to have you on board. But let's start out. Obviously, you know, you joined during World War II, but let's kind of start at the beginning. What prompted you to join? Was it the attack on Pearl Harbor, or were you already in the service? Tell us a little bit about how you came to be in the service.
How you joined, did you understand?
I joined in December, so they let me finish high school. And then in about May, they called me after I finished high school. I went to the Navy and went to Fort Pierce, you know, Camp Perry, Virginia, for boot camp.
Well, that certainly would have been exciting. Now, Pop, are you originally from the Mobile area?
From Pensacola.
Huh?
You're from Pensacola. He's from Pensacola.
I joined in Pensacola.
Oh, okay. All right. So you are still a son of the South down here. In your time in, after you went through your boot camp, Pop, where were you assigned? What was your job?
Where would you go? Where would you assign to?
I went to Camp Perry, Virginia, and from Camp Perry, Virginia, I tried to join the submarines, but they wouldn't let me because of bad teeth. So I went to amphibious in Fort Pierce, Florida. And I spent, I think it was about 6 weeks in the water down there.
And then you went to the Pacific.
Yeah. And then after I left Fort Pierce, they sent me to Chesapeake Bay and went aboard the AKA, the USS Tyrell. And that's where I stayed the full time I was in the service. They were welding the cleats on it when I went in, and when I come off of it, they were tearing it apart. They beat it all to pieces.
Oh my goodness! So you were on that one ship, your entire tour.
You were on the one ship the whole time.
Yeah, I was aboard ship the whole time.
So you started on the Atlantic coast.
We were amphibious. I was in the amphibious, and we were stationed on the ship. We wasn't actually the ship company, but we did the ship company's work part-time, mostly paint.
Oh, yes, they can find ways to keep you busy when you're on the ship. So where did you, once you went aboard, where all did you serve?
Where all did we go?
Yeah.
Yes.
We must have hit every island in the South and the Pacific, from the Philippines all the way to Alaska. Pearl Harbor about 7 times. Went to Guam a couple of times. Went to Saipan, the Philippine Islands. Kiwi, where they, and all kinds of little islands.
My goodness. And you were there with the amphibious units. So you obviously saw a lot of action.
Yeah.
Huh?
He was talking about when you took the troops to Okinawa.
Oh, we were on the invasion of Okinawa. We were in the lead boat in the second wave.
My goodness. So you obviously got to see that right up close.
Yes.
Now,
tell them how you got on
the
boat. How you got on the boat and you stayed on
certainly.
The whole time.
Huh?
How you got on the boat.
When we went aboard the VP, we got on and we had K rations. So we was on the boat for about 6 days. You wasn't allowed to talk at night, and you wasn't allowed to move at night, because if you moved, they'd shoot you. They was afraid you'd be a Japanese trying to sink the ship. One night we tied up to some oil drums. There's a big ship about 50 yards from us. Well, a little bit after dark, Hilton says, you know, if they shoot these drums, we'd be burned to death. I said, no, so let's move. Well, he hit that key, and the only thing saved us was the oil drum, because there was 100,000 bullets between us and them oil drum. They finally, we hollered AK-80, and finally they turned the lights on. So pull over here. We tied up the side of it. That's where we spent the rest of the night. But them oil drums saved our lives.
My goodness, just that little bit of movement, and that's why you're here with us today. So after Iwo Jima, after the landing there, where did you go from there?
He missed Iwo Jima.
I missed Iwo Jima loaded his ship with pet milk in San Francisco, and we carried it to How Are You, and they had to unload it. Took us 2 days to unload it. Took them 2 days to unload it. So we missed Iwo Jima, but we was told later we were train for Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and Japan. But the war ended before we got to Japan. Thank you.
Yes, that is, I was actually listening to a radio broadcast about, you know, the projections of what an invasion of Japan would have looked like. And obviously, to someone, you know, your age in the service, that would have meant that you probably would have been in that landing.
Yes, that's right.
So once the war wrapped up, Pop, you came back home, and we got about a minute. But you know, so what did you do after the service, Pop?
I came home and went back to work with Peter Brothers and automobile parts.
Ah, okay, all right. And so now Mobile is your home, and here you are, you're a 100-year-old veteran, and Tom was sending me pictures of you out cutting your grass.
When I left Peter Brothers, I went to work for Champion Spark Plugs, and I worked for them 18 years.
Yeah, he was cutting grass today.
That's what.
And I still move.
My goodness.
I can't sit.
Oh, no. When you sit, that's when everything starts to fall apart. So, Pop, I appreciate you coming on with us, and appreciate you sharing your story. And you keep cutting grass, but make sure you stay hydrated because it gets a little hot out there.
I don't cut grass after 9 o'clock.
I understand.
I cut from about 7 to 9, and that's it.
Outstanding. Well, Pop, thank you for your service. Thank you for sharing your story. Billy, thank you for coming on with us. And here's to the July 4th. I'm glad you'll be around for that celebration. And we look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
All right,
thank you so much, you two. Y'all have a great evening. And on the other side of the break, more information when we return on the Scuttlebutt.
And Cal Walters, radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans. Transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Tom Claxton, the Top Cat, is out today, but I am Cal Walters, and we're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. And, of course, we always want to thank the folks that help make this show possible, the Battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park, Alabama Pipe and Supply, our sea lawyer, Colin Kimberly, and all the folks at the law firm of Garth Berg and Kimberly, Miss Keisha Chambers, the Medicare lady, Daphne's Hottest Eatery at the coolest location, the Waterfront Restaurant at One Yacht Club Drive, the Charlie Wilson Insurance Agency, and Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens. And it was wonderful to chat with our World War II veteran, Pop Jones. You know, we don't have many of our World War II veterans still around,
But, you know, it was amazing. As I mentioned, Tom had sent me pictures of Pop out there cutting his grass. And he's not on one of those fancy riding lawnmowers. He's got the one that you have to push. So he's out there. And, you know, Tom also mentioned that Pop does a lot of visiting to the USS Alabama, to the ship there, and spends a lot of time remembering his comrades that he served with. So it was an honor to be able to have him on the Scuttlebutt here with us, especially, as I said, with, you know, D-Day, just kind of in the rearview mirror, the commemoration of D-Day. But I wanted to jump into a topic that a lot of veterans are probably are dealing with in one stage or another. And it was a story that came off of military.com. But the headline is, VA doctor warns of serious quiet threat plaguing aging veterans. And it deals with bone density testing. So Dr. Shannon Carpenter is a shoulder and elbow surgeon at the Kansas City VA Medical Center. And she is working to try to find ways to prevent bone fractures before they happen. And apparently, and this is something that I was not aware of, she says that fragility, that fractures, pose a serious threat to aging veterans, especially women. Now, of course, I think we probably all know that, you know, with women as they age, the threat of osteoporosis increases. But she is really pushing for our female veterans, especially, to start bone density screening at age 40. Rather than age 50, which is apparently the current guidelines. She goes on to say that the process is that everybody starts losing bone density at 30 to 35 on average. But she's saying that the scan at 40 is not necessarily about diagnosing the disease, but really trying to find out whether somebody has reached their peak bone mass, and then being able to take steps, whether it's diet, exercise, lifestyle changes, that can protect what she says is someone's, quote, bone span, which is how long a person's skeleton will support independence in their life. And, you know, goodness knows, we were just talking with a 100-year-old veteran who is still very active. And I think one of the things that he mentioned when I mentioned that he was out cutting grass is he says that he doesn't sit around and not do anything. And I think that's one of the keys, whether you're a veteran or not, but I know she is specifically focusing here, Dr. Carpenter is, on veterans, is that it's the movement. It's enabling people to continue doing the things that they have enjoyed, and so that they can continue to be able to do those things. Or if for whatever reason they have become less active because of problems, she says it gives people the right to give back into doing the things that they enjoy, and simple things, playing with your grandkids, being able to reach things on a shelf. And so it's interesting that she's been looking at this for years now. She originally began treating veterans more than 15 years ago. And she's worked as a VA surgeon for the past 6 years. And that's where she believes that's what really has led her to promote this cause of getting these bone density tests earlier to avoid injuries as our veterans get older. Now, she said that in the article, what she's looking to do is to make the veterans more aware of this, because as I mentioned earlier in the article, the average age to start that bone density testing is in the 50s, whereas she's now pushing to have the veterans come in to their healthcare providers to push to get that bone density testing earlier. Now, as she said, she thinks it should be around the age of 40. And that the reason is, she says, by the time you hit 50, it may be too late. She says, you know, one out of every two women over age 50 and one out of every four men will have a fracture in their lifetime, but most are never screened or diagnosed or treated. And so she's really pushing this to the forefront so that especially veterans in the VA system, that they can be proactive about this. And she mentions a number of different ways that veterans can improve bone density with age. And some of you may know this, but again, I thought it was a fascinating article when she really looked at the veterans for them, especially female veterans. Resistance impact training, lifting weights and weight-bearing exercises. Obviously, you got to get protein and calcium. So good thing that, you know, we've got an administration that is pushing a very protein rich diet. And of course, you know, drink that whole milk, because that has plenty of calcium. For women, she said, you need to look at hormones, because as you age, the menopause transition accelerates that bone loss. So talk to your physician about it. And as Pop mentioned, avoid a sedentary lifestyle. Get up, get moving, try to avoid smoking as well. And as she said, getting a scan and knowing your numbers so that it can lead to earlier treatment. And there are medications that can help you in trying to rebuild that bone and salvage that. So, you can continue to do those things that you would like to do as you get older, and you can avoid the average of becoming someone who does sustain a fracture because of osteoporosis. She says the fracture is often the first sign of osteoporosis, and it is a warning that we cannot ignore, but she says it is something that can be treatable. So I saw this article, thought it was very interesting, but really the cusp of it is, go to your healthcare provider, talk to them about it, talk to them earlier than you normally would, because they might not be on the forefront of it as she is. So a lot of good information there. Hopefully that was helpful to most of you. On the other side of the break, we've got Tom's tirade on Old Glory. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
Mr. Tom Claxton.
This past weekend on June the 14th, throughout our nation, folks gathered together to commemorate one of our national holidays. That's right, Saturday was a national holiday. But I bet most of you missed it. You see, Saturday was Flag Day, in honor and recognition of Old Glory. And don't get me started on just how tattered and worn our dear old flag has become under the current crew of politicians in the White House and on Capitol Hill these days. Needless to say, we have never been in greater need of this nation to rally around our national standard. But before I go too far down that rabbit hole, You see, people, many of them veterans, gathered together on the 14th to celebrate a holiday that is very important to our nation, but one, it seems, that has been forgotten by many. Hell, by most, if you look at that coverage on TV. And you don't hear of many Flag Day sales or get invited to many Flag Day barbecues, and yet we gather together each year to commemorate our national flag and to remember all that it means to us and to our nation. You know, maybe what is lacking in our celebration of Flag Day is not the celebration itself, but an honest and true understanding of just exactly what it is that we are celebrating. So Top Cat is now going to go all teacher on you. See if you can keep up, because I was around most of this time. On June the 14th, 1777, that was a good year, the Continental Congress, seeking to promote pride and unity in a fledgling nation, adopted the following. Resolved that the flag of the United States be 13 stripes, alternate red and white, that the Union be 13 stars, white and a blue field, representing a new constellation. The stars at that time represented Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Georgia, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Maryland, South Carolina, New Hampshire, Virginia, New York, North Carolina, and Rhode Island. It is generally accepted that the flag that the Congress adopted was originally sewn by Betsy Ross and completed in late May or early June of 1776. However, the creation and composition of the national flag that we know today might not have occurred had it not been for a rather curious coincidence in the early days of the Revolutionary War. Earlier that year, on January 1, 1776, the Continental Army was recognized in accordance with a congressional resolution which placed American forces under George Washington's control, my buddy. And on that New Year's Day, the Continental Army was laying siege to Boston, which had been taken over by the British Army. Washington ordered the Grand Union flag, which had the British Union Jack in place of our current field of stars, hoisted above his base at Prospect Hill, in compliment of the United Colonies. In Boston, on that same New Year's Day, the Loyalist supporters of Britain had been circulating a recent King George speech, offering the Continental forces favorable terms if they laid down their arms. These Loyalists were convinced that the King's speech had impressed the Continentals into surrendering. As a sign of the Continental's surrender, the Loyalists mistook the flying of the Grand Union flag over Prospect Hill as a show of respect to King George. However, the Continentals knew nothing of the speech until later. Upon learning this, General Washington wrote in a letter dated January the 4th, "By this time, I presume they began to think it strange we have not made a formal surrender of our lines." Who says old George didn't have a sense of humor? But obviously a new flag was needed, and thus our national colors were born. As our nation had grown from its humble origins, our flag had remained a steadfast symbol of freedom throughout this world and rallying point for those who call this nation home. Perhaps the first words describing the meaning of our flag to an individual in time of war were penned in 1814 in the waters off of a besieged Fort McHenry by Francis Scott Key. As the smoke cleared from the fort and daylight came, he wrote, "The flag was still there." Of course, we now know his simple, heartfelt, handwritten poem as our national anthem. And for two centuries, now we have joined together to sing Key's words and pay respects to our flag, our men and women who have fought for and under the flag, and yes, those that have died protecting that for which it stands. In recognition of what the flag had meant to our nation, on June the 14th, 1916, President Woodrow Wilson issued a proclamation calling for a nationwide observation of Flag Day. And so we still gather, though our numbers are few, as so many have done before us, to pay our respects to our flag and to remember what it has meant to each of us. It is an honor and a privilege to be able to come together in respect to celebrate our national standards, remembering the many sacrifices that have made our freedom possible. And it is necessary that we who have served under the flag in years past take the time to pass on just what it means to those who haven't served and for those yet to serve. One only needs to look to the mess into which our progressive politicians and the dedicated communists within our midst have allowed our nation to descend into an order to realize what had always made America exceptional. That exceptionalism is ours because of those who have served under this flag, that have fought and died so that others may live and live in freedom, not only from enemies abroad, but from the tyranny of a government of elites. That those who serve, maybe even more so because they serve as an all-volunteer military. Our brave men and women serve a higher cause than the meager paycheck that they get at the end of the month. They have and continue to fight for the principles, like duty, honor, country, and embodied by the flag. Contrast that with so many of the politicians that call themselves public servants, but who would truly like to see the American people as servants to their unchecked power. The politicians who spit on the Constitution and revile those patriots who fought for it. Those who bastardize the principles of freedom and liberty to abuse the American people and undermine our way of life. Those who have opened our borders to criminals and have looted our national treasure for their own enrichment. Those who would persecute patriots and encourage anarchists. Those who have sold our children and grandchildren into economic slavery without a second thought. I don't have to mention any names. You know them. But that is exactly why Old Glory is so special, because no phony baloney politician can steal from it what was earned with the blood and sacrifice of so many. And so I ask that each of you take a few moments with your children and grandchildren and tell them what the flag means to you and what it should mean to them, and hopefully one day to their children, should the flag still be there for them. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton. Oh, and congrats to the Army for 250 years.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Forward up, sir!
Forward up, sir! So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack! That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and streaming on the internet at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters. Tom Claxton is out on a little R&R. But we're a couple of Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it and the fighting spirit to keep it. And, obviously, that tirade on Old Glory is one that we had previously recorded, and Flag Day is coming up on Sunday this week. So just look into the local veterans community, maybe check out your local American Legion or even the South Alabama Veterans Council to see if there are any Flag Day ceremonies that are happening in the local community. Normally they are, and many times you'll have a proper flag retirement ceremony as part of that, where many of the groups will collect old flags throughout the course or no longer useful flags throughout the course of the year, and they will have a ceremony to properly retire those. So just be on the lookout. You know, and as Tom mentioned, take some time to talk with your kids or your grandkids or even your great-grandkids about what the flag means. It's become such a political ragdoll at this point, and a flashpoint in physically in certain instances. And I can't say where exactly it started. I'm certain you can probably trace a lot of it back to the Vietnam era. But, if we as veterans don't instill that love for our flag and what it means, it's not just a piece of cloth. You look at the stories of what that flag has meant to our veterans when, they were isolated in combat, when that was the one thing that they could look to. And, and it really goes back to when Francis Scott Key was penning what would become the Star Spangled Banner there in Baltimore Harbor. And
It's those kind of things that our kids and our grandkids aren't getting in the schools. Goodness knows, a lot of schools no longer do the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. And I'm also reminded there was a council, and I want to say it was out in California. You're probably not surprised. It was a city council meeting, and they all stood to recite the Pledge of Allegiance, and all the others. The flag was actually behind where everyone was seated, so the council members stood up and turned around. And this one councilwoman stayed seated and did not face the flag while everyone else was reciting the national Pledge of Allegiance. And she said that she took that time to collect herself. And it's that sort of apathy and actual hatred that we need to stem the tide of. And that really goes back to instilling that love of country and at least a reverence for our national standard in our youth. But that is going to bring us to the close of tonight's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program. Certainly want to thank Pop for joining us, and, of course, Patrick Chump. Please keep our warriors in your prayers until we join you again. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.